It is so easy to lose heart. 1 minute life is good, and the next it is dark and discouraging. Sometimes it is that relentless momentum towards a negative prospect that keeps us worried and on edge. And what happens then when people we rely on die or leave, or the institutions that have provided security for us and resourced us begin to crumble? When all that is seen and visible can no longer be counted on, it is so tempting to lose heart. In his letter to the church in Corinth, Paul compares the physical body to an earthly tent that can be destroyed. And he reminds people that this is just a temporary tent. They and we as a church have a building, a home made for us by God. It's not made with human hands, but it is one that lasts forever. It is seen, unseen, and in the heavenly realm. There, he says, that's where we need to bank our hope. Paul's words are necessary for us to reflect on. There's a real tension between living in the seen world and in the unseen world, because as God's people, we live in both. The world we see now feels particularly dangerous. If we listen to the news, it's as though the world is teetering on the brink of disaster. Chronic anxiety has become our constant companion, and it's no way to live. And because the world is in such a precarious state, wouldn't it be nice if church were a secure and safe haven, an anchor in the storms of life? But it's not all that secure anymore. At least church in the traditional sense isn't. In report after report, in book after book, there is evidence that Christianity is on the decline, especially in wealthier countries like ours. In the latest Canadian Mennonite magazine, Will Braun wrote an article on the downward trend of financial donations in the Mennonite churches across Canada. And his article was called "A Picture of Gradual Decline." In his article, Braun says that money is not the measure of a church's health, but is a fairly accurate indicator of its priorities. While it may not be the only measure of a church's health, I would argue it is an indicator of priorities and therefore the church's survival. What we invest in is telling. We have only to look at churches across the Waterloo region to know that once vibrant churches have closed, amalgamated, or they're existing with a decreasing population of seniors. That's not what many of us grew up with, is it? I remember churches being packed to the brim. There were all these planning programs to accommodate the growing numbers. Our lives centered on the church. There were boys' clubs and there were girls' clubs. There were choirs galore. There were youth groups. There were mission projects. There were ladies' sewing circles. And there were men whose meetings and money kept that church engine going at full tilt. It was exciting to be a part of something so alive and popular. Did we ever anticipate that our way of doing church would dwindle? Did we ever think that regular Sunday attendance would be defined as once a month? Did we foresee this seductive competition from our culture for church involvement through travel, coffee time with friends, some much-needed downtime, sports? Our planet Earth is changing. And the church is changing too. The church, as we know it, is radically and rapidly changing. How are we going to stay vital and viable? Well, when this church was built, they wisely made it multi-purpose. There's an early years program in the basement. There's practice rooms for the Beckett School of Music. We share our worship space with two other congregations. One is Spanish-speaking, the other is Romanian. Various groups rent out our space. We've remained prudent, aware, and flexible, and that has kept us viable. But we also know we are vulnerable, just like everyone else. It's not something we can escape. And ultimately, I think that's a good thing. Church decline is a wake-up call. We know we can't coast along. We have to pay attention not only to our capricious culture, but also to a God who is present in everything and everywhere and every time. God is in all that's around us, and God is within us, in the seen and in the unseen. As we take note of these disheartening realities in our current global and church situations, let's listen to Paul's words, which come just before the section Steve read. Paul writes, and I am paraphrasing here, he says to this church, we are not promoting ourselves. We are telling people it is God and it is Jesus, God through Jesus, that rules. It is God who said, let light shine out of the darkness. This same God has shone in our hearts to give light to the understanding that God's glory has been seen in the face of Jesus Christ. This amazing knowledge is a treasure, and it's a treasure that we hold in our fragile bodies so that we know this extraordinary power comes from God. It does not come from us. Then Paul goes on to say these bold and prophetic words, which I believe has given to hope through the generations. And they still speak to us today. He says, we are afflicted in every way, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Because we carry Christ in our very bodies, both his death and his life. So do not lose heart. As that early church was being formed and struggling to find their way, there were many voices who claimed to have the truth and sought to obtain people's loyalties. Paul, in response to this humbly, and yet with complete conviction, says, the power of God is with us because we believe in Jesus, in his life and in his death and in his leading. Those are powerful words of encouragement. And this week I found another source of encouragement, and they come from Teilhard de Chardin, a Jesuit priest, philosopher, paleontologist, and geologist. Can you imagine? And the quote I'm about to read comes from Richard Rohr's Daily Meditations, which means that some of you have already read this. Teilhard saw that creativity and invention could forge the modern path of evolution, but he also saw that science alone cannot fulfill the cosmic longing for completion. God rises up at the heart of cosmic evolution through the power of love, which science and technology can facilitate, but not surpass. The future of the earth, therefore, lies not in science and technology, but in the spiritual power of religions and the power of love. We are born out of love, we exist in love, and we are destined for eternal love. It is time to reinvent ourselves in love. And that's the end of the quote. I am intrigued by Chardin's call to reinvent ourselves in love as a way to influence the future of the earth. I believe we can do that. In fact, in a very purposeful way, we are doing that in our relearning community. Steve and Trevor and I have been at this training for close to 3 years. Is it 3 years? No? Yeah. And as strange as this sounds, we're actually just starting to get the hang of it. We have found it an immense challenge to reorient ourselves and reimagine what it's like to be Christ's disciples in a different way within our present context. The trainers told us it would take years to shift our church culture and our way of being disciples. And you know, they were right. It's true. Although I can see that our understanding is slowly starting to shift. And I find that heartening. Relearning how to be God's community is about focusing on spiritual growth and pursuing discipleship that transforms us. First, we need to invite God to renew us. And within the relearning community, we pay very close attention to how God is already operating in our lives, because so often we are unconscious of it. But if we get together and start to realize God is at work, what is God doing? We start to see there's an opportunity to respond in a fresh and maybe an untried way. A key piece of relearning community is our relationships, how we relate to each other. And that is foundational. It is the foundation on which we build and move forward and move out. We need to forge relationships based on what Jesus modeled. Some of that is already happening here at Pioneer Park, that shift that we're making. This past year, we had a DNA group, and we met together so that we could attune ourselves and speak to each other and notice how God is at work in our lives. And then to own it and to respond to it and to know that it has been witnessed within other people who claim God as their center. For many of you, that relationship kind of change is happening in your prayer groups. In the past 6 months, the MCT has held alternate meetings at someone's house in order to foster relationships and to understand each other better. It's going to take time. Well-rooted change takes time, and it takes intention. In the next few months, Steve and Trevor are going to take the MCT through a process where each ministry coordinator will discover their gifted ministry according to Paul's teachings. You could be a teacher, a prophet, an apostle, a pastor, or an evangelist. Every one of you has those gifts, some primary, some less obvious. And you will go through that process eventually too as a church, because understanding what your gifted ministry is allows you to own them and allows you to work together in a certain way and to release that into the working of the church. And it was interesting as we went through that process to know how our giftedness complemented each other. And over the last few years, as we've been working and doing planning and setting goals, it has become so obvious that the gifts we have are different, but they help us to work not only better, but in a much fuller sense. Our understanding of what we need to do stretches out, and it's so rewarding. Our Mennonite conference has been proactive in promoting and teaching this new way of discipleship because they have been reading the times. They know we can stay vital and alive by being church in a fresh and a relevant way. This fall, the fourth group of MCEC, the conference churches, will start their training with Relearning Community. It is encouraging. Church, as we once knew it, may be dying out, but our hope is in God, who is alive and at work and making things happen. As I reflected on Paul's words, there were other thoughts that came to me, and one of them was, am I living by faith? And if faith in God is central to my life, how does that affect the forces that come into my life I don't have any control over? How much power do I believe God actually has? Well, God knows what is going on with us and the entire universe as creator. That's no secret. And it is God's nature to reconcile and to recreate. God wants to create something new and life-giving in situations that have gone wrong and in places where the time has come. Because that's what God does. God is about transformation. Just look at those stories after stories in the Bible. The people who were slaves in Egypt being led out of that land. Joseph being sold as a slave by his brothers, eventually holding a very high position and thereby saving his family from starvation. And then that poor little shepherd boy, David, becoming the king of Israel. And Jesus coming and turning our notion of who God is upside down. God makes good things happen, but it is seldom easy, and it is never in an instant. Necessary and significant change takes a long time. We're human beings. We tend to learn our lessons slowly. God has been discipling people from the beginning of time because God has faith in us. Yet when the going gets rough, it is so easy to lose heart. At those times, in particular, we need to hear the voices of those who remind us to hold fast. Many years ago, when I had no idea what direction my life would take, and I really felt adrift, I found a piece of paper and a pile of papers my friend had that was destined for the recycling box. And as I was sitting there talking with her in a distracted sort of way, I was shuffling through these papers. And then this caught my attention. I think it was more because of the quality of the paper. But then I stopped and I started reading it. And I felt that God was speaking to me, because it spoke so directly to my quiet desperation. It was penned by John Henry Newman in the 19th century. The language is exclusive, and I want to read it to you in its original form. God has created me to do some definite service. Some work has been entrusted to me which has not been given to another. I have my mission. I may never know it in this life, but I shall be told it in the next. I have a part in a great work. I am a link in a chain, a bond of connection between persons. God has not created me for naught. I shall love as Christ has loved. I shall do his work. I shall be an angel of peace, a preacher of truth in my own place, while not intending it, if I do but keep his commandments and serve him in my calling. Therefore, I will trust God, whatever, wherever I am. I can never be thrown away. If I am in sickness, my sickness may serve him. In perplexity, my perplexity may serve him. If I am in sorrow, my sorrow, even my sorrow, may serve him. My sickness or perplexity or sorrow may be necessary causes of some great end, which is quite beyond me. He does nothing in vain. God may prolong my life. He may shorten it. He knows what he is about. My friends may be taken from me. I may be thrown away amongst strangers. I may feel desolate. Even my spirits may sink. The future may be hidden from me. Still, God knows what he is about. These words were enough to keep me from losing heart. They helped me to go on in faith and with trust. As God's people, we live by faith. We live in both that seen and unseen world. We live in God's world. And by trusting God's power, we can participate in how God is responding to life on earth. Our life of faith matters. We need only to hold fast and to do our part, being attentive to the one who makes things happen. My final source of encouragement is you. There is strength and commitment and faith enough in this church community to lean into the necessary changes and lessons and trust God for the outcome. At Pioneer Park, I have witnessed people being afflicted, but not crushed. I have seen perplexity, but not lasting despair. I have known of tough challenges, but not of people who feel forsaken. I have seen those who are struck down by situations, but not destroyed by them. I have been a part of a congregation who has held fast to their faith, and despite the travails of life, have not lost heart. And for this, I thank our God who bestows upon us a million graces. Amen.